Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anna Mateo, Kava Razai, Dorothy Gundy, Lucia Malonig, and Phil Dierking. Later, Jill Robbins and John Russell will bring us Everyday Grammar. But first, here is Anna Mateo.
On Thursday, Kenyan police fired bullets and tear gas at stone-throwing protesters who were against a repeat of the country's disputed presidential election. In Kenya's third-largest city, Kisumu, gunfire killed one person and wounded three others. Riot police also fired tear gas in two Nairobi slums. Protesters started fires early in the morning on Thursday, and a church was firebombed. In August, President Uhuru Kenyatta won 54% of the vote in the country's presidential election. Opposition leader Raila Odinga received nearly 45% of the vote. However, Kenya's Supreme Court overturned the results because of what it described as irregularities and illegalities in the vote. Kenyatta called the justices crooks and ordered a new election. The night before the court was to consider a last-minute appeal to delay the vote, a driver for the deputy chief justice was shot and wounded. The shooting recalled the murder shortly before the August vote of a top election official responsible for electronic voting. Human rights groups say police killed at least 67 people during protests after the August vote. Meanwhile, Odinga has dropped out of the new vote. He said reforms have not been made to make the vote credible. He asked his supporters to boycott the voting. One school in Kisumu that saw huge lines of voters in the August election was closed Thursday. Its gates were locked. An opposition supporter said, "We are not going to vote and we are not going to allow it." An election official, John Ngutai Muyeko, sat with the uncollected boxes in another school guarded by security forces. He said no ballot boxes had been delivered to the 190 polling stations in Kisumu. Voting went on in areas where President Uhuru Kenyatta has support. However, the Associated Press reported that fewer voters were turning out in those areas than in the August election. At a polling station in Kenyatta's hometown of Gatundu, a voter said, "Our hope for the country is that whoever emerges the winner will be able to unite the country, which is already torn apart by politicians and politics of the day." In 2013, Odinga lost to Kenyatta in an election filled with accusations of vote rigging. Odinga also ran unsuccessfully in 2007. More than 1,000 people were killed in that election, and another 600,000 were forced from their homes. Many observers say ethnic divisions hurt the promise of Kenya's democracy. Kenyatta is from the Kikuyu tribe, while Odinga is a Luo. I'm Anna Mateo.
A group of 55 non-governmental organizations published a letter Monday calling for a new Paris peace conference because of a severe deterioration in the state of human rights and democracy in Cambodia. The letter was released on the 26th anniversary of the Paris peace agreements that ended conflict in the Southeast Asian country. The NGOs called on United Nations General Secretary Antonio Guterres, Indonesian President Joko Widodo, and French President Emmanuel Macron to take decisive action. The agreements ended war between Cambodia and Vietnam in 1991. They permitted the United Nations to control Cambodia's government as the country created a system of democratic elections. The letter noted that countries that signed the accord are required to consult with members of the Paris Conference if the agreements are not being upheld. The NGOs wrote, "We respectfully submit that your obligation to take concrete action under the Paris peace agreements has now been triggered as a result of the severe deterioration in the state of human rights and democracy in Cambodia in recent weeks and months."
Last month, Cambodian police arrested opposition Cambodia National Rescue Party Chief Khum Sokha. They charged him with treason. They said he was working with the United States to overthrow the ruling Cambodian People's Party. Critics say the arrest shows Prime Minister Hun Sen strengthening his attacks on political opponents as the country prepares for a national election next July. Since Khum Sokha's arrest, about 20 CNRP lawmakers, along with Deputy Presidents Mu Sakhua and Ong Chai Yang and party activists, have fled Cambodia. Hun Sen has threatened to shut down the opposition and give its seats in parliament and its commune councillor positions to parties that support the government.
Since August, the government has expelled the U.S.-funded NGO, the National Democratic Institute, and suspended the operations of 20 radio stations that broadcast reports and programs by U.S. broadcasters Radio Free Asia and Voice of America. It also told the English-language Cambodia Daily newspaper that it must pay a large tax. The newspaper was forced to close. In the letter, the 55 NGOs said that unless things change, the vote next year has no chance of legitimacy. They called for the Paris conference to meet again for an emergency summit to discuss the state of Cambodian democracy and ways to convince Cambodia's government to change its policies.
Phil Robertson is the Deputy Asia Director of Human Rights Watch. He released a statement that was added to the letter. He noted that the United States, the United Nations, and international groups have spent billions of dollars to support Cambodia's democratic development. He said it is concerning that the international community has remained largely silent about the actions of Hun Sen. He urged the nations that signed the Paris agreements to stop Hun Sen from making his destruction of democracy and disregard for human rights the new normal for Cambodia. CNRP chief Khom So Kha wrote a letter from prison that was published Monday on his Facebook page. He said he supported the calls for signatories of the peace accords to gather for an urgent meeting about Cambodia. He said his country's government has been marching against the spirit of the Paris Peace Accords. The CNRP leader added that issuing statements alone is not enough and urged members of the international community to take actual measures to prevent the government from victimizing the Cambodian people.
Hun Sen has dismissed suggestions that his government had violated the peace accords. The prime minister said that calling for the signatories of the agreement to meet again was outdated and cannot be realized because four Cambodian political parties that were present at the time would have to be recreated. He said, now there is only a single Cambodian party, and that is my legitimate government here. I'm Kaveh Razai.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Guillermo Peralta Martinez does not know how old he is or where he was born. He does not even know his mother's name. He also does not know if he is a legal resident of the United States. Martinez appears to be in his 30s. He is mentally disabled and has difficulty speaking. Many people have trouble understanding the few words and sentences he speaks in Spanish. Yet, he has made friends in York Springs, Pennsylvania. Some people there say he has lived in the town since at least the 1990s, and maybe before then.
Earlier this year, agents working for the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency arrested Martinez. He now faces deportation. ICE officials told VOA that orders signed by President Donald Trump do not list groups of people who may not be deported. In other words, even if a person is mentally disabled, he or she may be expelled. ICE agents say they arrested Peralta in February as he was preparing to go to work. ICE says he and another individual were arrested as they were leaving a building where someone who had entered the U.S. illegally lived. It says that person had been found guilty of a crime.
In a report written after Peralta was arrested, the agents said he and the other man admitted they were citizens of Mexico and in the United States illegally. The men were taken to a detention center in the town of York, about 39 kilometers away. Neither man had a criminal record in the United States. Peralta remembers, they took my fingerprints and they put handcuffs on. He said he was treated well in the detention center, but he felt mixed up. I didn't know what was going to happen to me, he said.
An arrest order written after Peralta was detained says he made statements voluntarily to an immigration officer that he lacks immigration status and as such is removable under U.S. immigration law. The document states that Peralta said his mother and father are Mexican citizens, that he has a child who lives in Florida, and that he has no medical conditions. It says he was 45 years old at the time of his arrest. Lawyer Craig Shagan is representing Peralta. He disputes the information in the document. He says Peralta often does not know what he is saying. Shagan said, when him and I met in the York County prison, I would ask him, where do you live? And he would say in Spanish, out there. I would ask him his birth date, and he would say, 1 and 2. If you would ask him, were you born in Mexico? Yes. Were you born in Argentina? Yes. Were you born in Florida? Yes. Well, there's a problem there.
Shagan says someone who knew Peralta when he was a boy claims he is 10 years younger than U.S. officials say he is. He says Peralta was abandoned by his parents. Shagan says Peralta does not have a child. And he says Peralta was not arrested at the place ICE claims. Witnesses say he was arrested inside an apartment building while he was waiting for a ride to work. In a court document, Shagan writes, there is no evidence Peralta was doing anything suspicious. It is unlikely he would have been questioned regarding his citizenship, but for Guillermo's Hispanic appearance. Shagan also says there is no evidence that Peralta was born outside the United States. He says Peralta's clear cognitive impairment demonstrates that his own statements are potentially unreliable.
In April, Peralta was freed from jail after making a bail payment and promising to return for his next hearing. He had been in the jail for more than 2 months. Marlon Caraballal has known Peralta since 2011. She once lived in York Springs. She says the town's Hispanic community collected $5,000 in bail money to free him. Since his release, Peralta has returned to doing whatever work he can find. I want to stay here, he says, but he is afraid of being arrested again. ICE would not talk about Peralta's case except to say that he entered the United States illegally. Peralta's case is one of many at the U.S. Department of Justice Immigration Court in Philadelphia. As of the end of May, there were 2,536 cases waiting to be heard and decided at the court. When Peralta and his lawyer appeared in court in August, ICE asked for more time to develop its case. It was given until November 25th to do so. I'm Phil Dierking.
And I'm Lucia Malonig.
Sierra Leone hopes to raise millions of dollars for development projects by selling a large uncut diamond. It is believed to be one of the largest diamonds in the world. The public sale will take place in New York in December. The 709-carat gemstone is known as the Peace Diamond. This will be the second time Sierra Leone tries to sell the diamond. The government rejected the highest bid of $7.8 million at its first public sale in New York in May. More than half of the earnings from the sale will be used for water, electricity, education, and health projects in Sierra Leone, especially to aid Koryardu. That is the eastern village where the diamond was found. Martin Rappaport is chairman of Rappaport Group, an organization of diamond companies which will manage the sale. He told Reuters, "There's a reason God gave these diamonds to the poorest people in the world and made the richest people want them. This is making the world a better place." The Rappaport Group described the diamond as the 14th largest in the world. A Christian clergyman discovered it in March and gave it to the government. Diamonds were a conflict resource in Sierra Leone's 10-year civil war, which ended in 2002. Rebels would buy weapons with earnings from diamond sales. This led to the creation of the term Blood Diamond.
The 1977 movie Star Wars is an American classic with many memorable lines and characters. At one point in the film, the character C-3PO says the following words.
"We seem to be made to suffer. It's our lot in life."
Today, we are going to explore that statement. We are not talking about the meaning behind the statement. Instead, we will study the sentence's grammar. In particular, we are going to explore verb plus infinitive combinations. Seem to be, the words you heard in the movie, is one such example. Let's begin with some definitions.
An infinitive is the basic form of the verb. Sometimes it has the word to in front of it. In the sentence, "I like to study grammar," the words "to study" are an infinitive. A gerund is the form of a verb that ends in ing. It acts like a noun. For example, in the sentence, "Learning English is fun," the word "learning" is a gerund. Some verbs can be followed by an infinitive or a gerund. Knowing when to use an infinitive and when to use a gerund is difficult. However, the good news is this. Verb plus infinitive combinations are more common than verb plus gerund combinations. Moreover, in everyday speech, verbs from four basic groups are often followed by infinitives. These basic patterns can help you learn the hundreds of specific verb plus infinitive combinations. We will now give you examples of three of these basic meaning groups. We will tell you the most common verbs from these groups that you will hear in everyday speech. We will also give you famous examples from American popular culture.
Infinitives commonly follow verbs that express want or need. Common examples include the verbs want, like, hope, need, and wish. What do these verb plus infinitive combinations sound like in everyday situations? Let's listen to the following conversation.
Do you want to see a movie this afternoon?
I would like to see a movie, but I don't want to be indoors this afternoon. It's so beautiful outside.
How about this evening?
That sounds great. I can't stay up late, though, because I need to get up early tomorrow morning.
In the conversation, you heard several examples of verb plus an infinitive. Want to see, like to be, and need to get up. American popular culture also gives you more examples of how these structures sound. The 1997 romantic comedy film As Good As It Gets gives you one example.
You make me want to be a better man.
Here, actor Jack Nicholson uses the infinitive to be after the verb want.
Infinitives often follow verbs that suggest effort. Common examples include the verbs attempt, fail, manage, and try. You can hear examples of these structures in the following conversation about school. Imagine you hear two students speaking with each other. One student did well on a test, and the other student did not do very well.
I managed to get an A on the test.
Well, I tried to pass the test.
Oh, I'm sorry, you didn't do well?
Don't worry about it. I'll do better next time. Hey, do you want to play video games tomorrow?
Here the speakers used many past tense verbs. Managed and tried, for example. Even though the speakers used the past tense, they still used infinitives after the main verb. We hope you do not play video games instead of studying. American popular culture has many examples of try plus an infinitive. Consider these lines from the classic American horror film, The Silence of the Lambs. Here, the fictional Dr. Lecter talks about killing a person.
A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
In the example, Dr. Lecter uses the infinitive to test after the verb tried.
Infinitives also often follow verbs that are similar to the verb seem. Common examples include the verbs seem, appear, and tend. Let's listen to how speakers use these verbs in an everyday situation. Imagine a happy spouse returns home from a day at the office.
You seem to be happy with yourself.
I tend to smile when I get good news.
Really? What's the news?
I got a promotion.
You just heard two examples of a verb plus infinitive combination, seem to be and tend to smile. You might have also noticed that the words from the film Star Wars also fit into this group.
We seem to be made to suffer. It's our lot in life.
The next time you are watching TV or speaking with an American, try to listen for examples of verb plus infinitive. Ask yourself the basic meaning of the verb. Does it fit into one of the groups we talked about today? Gerunds and infinitives are difficult to learn, but with study and practice, you will master them. How can you do this? Try to use them as often as you can. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.